Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks. And this morning, we are connecting with Lieutenant Bob Smith of the Fairfield Fire Department. And Bob, good to have you here. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you. So I don't know if you can hear me typing in the background here, but I have a lot of people on Facebook talking about illegal fireworks. They're hearing them in all of their towns and cities for the most part. But before we get into illegal fireworks, I wanted to talk about the latest on the brush fire in Fairfield. Now, you were on scene for this, correct?
I was.
And I know you sent me a video. I don't know if it sparked as quickly and spread so quickly, but it was pretty ferocious.
Yeah, whenever you have a fire in an area like that, that's, you know, you got to remember that everything's been very dry, so the slightest little spark in there, slightest little heat can light that off, and it spreads very quickly once it gets going.
And First Electwoman Brenda Kupchick came on the show yesterday. She said it wasn't for sure, but there was a strong implication that a firework caused that blaze. Any update on that?
No, the fire marshal's still working on the investigation on it, but I can't tell you that when the first arriving units got there, they reported that they had heard fireworks in the area shortly before seeing the flames that were out there. So that's all that we know right now.
I mean, have we seen that happen before where illegal firework use has caused that kind of destruction?
Yeah, every year we see it. Fires, there's about 19,000 fires that are started by fireworks annually in the country. We're getting to that time of year where it's the 4th of July. Everybody's using different types of fireworks, and unfortunately, they don't use them properly. The only fireworks that are actually the only devices that are legal in Connecticut are sparklers and what's called a fountain. Anything that emits a flame, anything that explodes, anything that leaves the air is illegal in Connecticut. People use those things all the time, unfortunately, and causes a lot of damage, a lot of fires, and a lot of burns and injuries as well.
So are people ordering these, like, across the border or something? Where are they getting the illegal fireworks? Do you know?
Yeah, I'm not sure where they're coming in from. I know that in the state of Connecticut, they're not legal, so they're coming from some different states. I know you can travel down south and where they are legal, and people bring them back and put on different displays, much to our displeasure.
So something that probably a lot of people aren't familiar with is when you put on these fireworks displays at, let's just say, Penfield Beach or some of the other communities in our area, there's a lot of technical work and certainly expertise to be able to handle fireworks that I'm sure the common person has absolutely no idea about. Can you speak to the fact that there's a lot of danger behind firing off these illegal fireworks? It's not as simple as just lighting a match and there you go. That's it.
Yeah, absolutely. A regular 4th of July fireworks show is put on by professional pyrotechnics folks, and a lot of planning goes into that. A lot of experience goes into that. And even when you have the guys that have been doing it for hundreds of years and with many generations of families, they still have accidents out on different barges, and they're as careful as they can be. But you're talking about something that's actually exploding, and when something like that happens, it certainly has a major potential for injury. So a lot of safety precautions and a lot of licensing goes into it. You know, our fire marshal, the state fire marshal, they're all involved in trying to make things as safe as possible. But like I said, even when you have those folks that are true professionals that have been doing it for years, there's still the risk of injury and fire there.
Not to mention that every year around 4th of July, we talk about our pets and how they have anxiety over the sounds and everything that comes with fireworks. And now I'm hearing from a number of our listeners that their pets are needing Xanax. They're needing places to hide. They're shaking at night. They know that it's coming and they're building anxiety in these dogs specifically, but some are cats. And I think, can you speak to sort of, you know, that end of it? I know you're not a vet, but, you know, it's pretty common for animals to be spooked by these and run off or to, I would think, develop some anxieties because of fireworks.
Well, with the loud explosions and loud sounds, it startles even us. You know, having a pet in your house that's not used to it and gets spooked a little easy. I can imagine it causes a lot of anxiety. My dog doesn't like it, and she runs around the house when she hears it, and you can usually find her hiding in a corner. So, it's not something that you want to try to have your pets go deal with. Even people have issues with fireworks and loud sounds. You know, a lot of our veterans have been through a lot of trauma through the years, and when they hear those things go off as well, sometimes a PTSD thing will kick in for them as well. So even it's not just our pets, it's our neighbors and our friends as well.
I'm glad you brought that up, because you know what, the irony of it is, some people will say they're firing off these fireworks because we got gypped this year. The pandemic has ruined everything. Okay, we all know that song and dance. But you know what? The 4th of July is about our independence, and it's about honoring the people who fought for our country and our freedom. And the fact of the matter is, as you just brought up a great point, is that how are we even respecting our veterans and the people who serve if we bring them back to such a terrible place because we had to fire off a firework in our backyard?
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of our veterans would disagree. They enjoy the celebration, but there is a number of ones that are out there that do suffer from PTSD, and you know, it's just a small trigger that can bring them back to a spot that they're trying very hard not to remember. So I would encourage folks not to shoot off illegal fireworks. Mm-hmm. And just a couple of facts here before I have to go is you know, fireworks are very hot. The only things that are legal in Connecticut are sparklers, the little things you hold in your hands, and a fountain, something that's on the ground. But just how hot sparklers can actually get. We all know that water boils at 212 degrees. We've all had a splash of water when it's boiling on the pot in the stove. We cook our stuff in our oven, like a cake or something, at 350, right around there. And we've all had the opportunity to be pulling that cake pan out, and that you're always going to find that little speck of skin that's not covered by some type of pot holder and burn yourself. Glass actually melts at 900 degrees, very hot. Sparklers actually burn at like 1,200 degrees. That's five times hotter than water boiling of a burn. More than one out of four injuries that come into the emergency room around the 4th of July holiday are a result of somebody with a sparkler injury. So they're very hot. Even something that's legal, something that can be used properly, can cause an injury. So it's very important to remember that.
Absolutely. And, you know, before I go, or before you go, Lieutenant, I can't go anywhere. Before we let you go, Lieutenant Bob Smith, another thing I just had a question about is, you know, if people want to report this, I know that police and fire are responding if necessary. Do you know if there are any talks specifically in Fairfield or anywhere where determining where they're being shot off from? It's tricky. Because unless you can see physically where they're being shot from, you know, is this going to be a matter of going door to door and asking, are you shooting off fireworks, or surveillance the neighborhoods, you know, where we're hearing the fireworks consistently? You know, how is this being monitored? How can we actually report people if we don't know where they're coming from?
Well, it's a good question. I know that our police department is very diligent, working with our fire marshal's office, trying to locate and make sure that fireworks aren't being set off. Unfortunately, you know, they can't be everywhere all the time. If somebody had a complaint, they could certainly call the complaint into our emergency center at 203-254-4800, and the police will respond out there. But a lot of times, by the time they get there, the show's over, so they can't really find out who was doing it. So mm-hmm. I know that they're working diligently to try to put an end to illegal fireworks, but they, like I said, they can't be everywhere all the time. So they're doing their best.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, Lieutenant Bob Smith, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about this, and I know I'll have you back on the show really soon.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Jenny, I missed you last week. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. I missed you, too.
And I think you have a great topic for this week, because phase two came into effect last week, and now we're starting mm-hmm. to get into this more normal, if you will. So talk a little bit about the power of in-person connection. We've been lacking that lately.
Yeah. So it's so interesting now. One, I'm so thankful that things are starting to open up a bit and we can start to be in the same physical location with people and not just have to rely on a screen mm-hmm. as we have been for the past several months. And, you know, on one hand, I think the video conferencing was an amazing tool, and we still have to use it to a large degree. It was an amazing tool to keep us connected to some degree for business or for personal reasons, for all of those things, in a time when we did have to be careful and cautious because of the state of the virus. But it's interesting because over time I've noticed that, you know, personally, professionally, and even the research that I've seen has shown that, you know, long-term and forever, being online or on video is just no substitute for the in-person connection mm-hmm. that we can have and that we used to be a little bit more, you know, familiar with. Granted, it all started with, you know, the telephone, right? A long time ago when we started off making phone calls, and that was kind of a novelty. And now we see that, you know, there's everything's dating online, and it's, like I said, video conferencing, and we're texting, and we're messaging, and kind of all these other things. And then we kind of have to wonder long-term, what does this do to us when we don't have the in-person? And research shows it's not really good.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny, Jenny, because I remember being a teenager and my parents always worrying about looking up from your screen, make sure you're shaking hands, make sure you're making eye contact. You know, I remember being a teen and being told, if you can't make eye contact, you're not getting a job. If you can't keep your, you know, presence focused on the person in front of you, you're going to have issues socially going forward. And it's just interesting now because even as an adult, we've been thrusted into this world now of being stuck on a screen. So it will be interesting to see people sort of transition back into, well, how do I greet someone? How do I actually mm-hmm. interact with somebody without being awkward? It's going to be interesting.
Mm-hmm. It is going to be interesting. And some of the things that have gotten lost are, you know, the contact, eye contact, right? Mm-hmm. Using the nonverbal body language gestures. And granted, you know, you can do some of that on a screen, but it's not nearly as effective as in person. And it's those body cues and those eye contact moments and all of those things that help to build trust. And there's actually quite the most research that seems to have been done in this area is in relation to business. And when it comes to, do executives hold in-person meetings or do they do video meetings, especially when it involves people across the country, even across the world? And what they found is that people really, really value the in-person. And some of that is because, well, one, who wants to just look at a screen for an entire day? I think we've discovered that that is incredibly exhausting. Mm-hmm. But also because you don't build the same kind of trust. And that trust is key, whether it's in a personal relationship, in a business relationship. And so many times those aspects of trust were built, you know, during the breakout time, when they went for a snack, when they had lunch, when they, you know, were playing some rounds on the golf course, when they're sharing bits and pieces about themselves personally that maybe don't even have anything to do with the business component. But when people get to share what's important to them and they get to read the response and the nonverbal cues of the person that they're speaking with, that's huge. And as we know, so much of the time when we're on video, we just see from, you know, the shoulders up. And we laughed at so many times during quarantine, right, that people even probably just, you know, we're sitting around in like shorts.
Oh, and sweatpants, sure.
Super casual, like yep. on their from their waist down, and then maybe they put the suit and tie on from the waist up,
right?
Because that's all that you're seeing.
Oh yeah, it's fun. It's funny because working in television news for so long, and always knowing that the sports guys and the weather men, they always wore shorts and sneakers, but you can never see them because it's always from the waist mm-hmm. up. So I'm used to that, just seeing that. But it's funny to see that people are in these corporate meetings on Zoom and they're just wearing a tie and then it's, you know, they're in their boxers. It's actually pretty funny. It's funny. But, you know, it is going to be an adjustment. And Jenny, I'm sure you'll have clients out the door wondering, you know, what are some things, what are some tips that you have? Can you give us your contact information if anybody wants to reach out to you for just some advice on this and many other things that you have offering?
Sure. It's 203-293-8554, or they can contact me at jennycurrycounseling.org, Jenny with a Y, Curry with an IE.
All right, Jenny, I appreciate it. So glad to have you back. I don't know if I could take a week off from you ever again. It just didn't feel right, but I'm glad that you're back.
All right. Thank you.
All right,
have a great day.
You too. Thank you. Bob Donovan is the director of marriage ministry at Black Rock Church. He's joining me now. Bob, how are you?
We're good, Melissa. Good to hear your voice again.
Yeah, good to talk to you, too. Now, according to the American Association for Christian Counseling, which I know you follow along with them very closely, apparently the U.S. has already been in the middle of a mental health challenge way before the pandemic got here. And then the pandemic hit and things only got worse. So, first of all, tell us what you've learned from this data.
Yeah, so it was really interesting. This hit me in two ways, one of which was that it kind of just affirmed what I thought. I mean, I was on your show a few months ago, and at that point, this is really early on. Mm-hmm. I just said, marriages are going to be really challenged by this, almost like a mental health pandemic that people may not realize. So when this report came out and I read it, it indicated that one in three adults in America are experiencing signs of clinical depression right now. That's almost 50%.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also cited the Kaiser Family Foundation, another great organization that reports on health issues. And they found 45% of adults that had a negative impact to their mental health. And, you know, that's kind of a macro. And I said, wow, that's like putting numbers to something I thought. But conjunction with that, we had a couple invite us over last week, and this couple, I'll call them William and Kathy. I mean, these guys are strong Christian couples. I mean, this would be the last couple I thought would be stressed. And the guy, William, was telling me he went through this kind of a little funky depression. The last guy I thought that I know, charismatic, high energy, positive guy, was going through this depression. I just sat back in my chair and I said, wow. So I saw it firsthand. How it impacted, and it did impact the relationship to some degree too.
Yeah, I would think that exactly what you said, that when you're not in check, it's going to have a ripple effect on your spouse. It's going to have an effect on your kids. Talk to us a little bit about if you don't go and look into some of these issues you might be having, what that's going to do to your counterpart, to your significant other.
Yeah, it kind of depends on the marriage health.
Sure.
And how it is, because honestly, so these guys, and even my wife and I mean, we've probably had more disagreements in the last 3 months than we had in 5 years. So, and even this guy, like, these guys are strong, and they were healthy, and she was almost like taken back, like, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
So she was able to lean into him because she knows him so well, and this is so out of character. She leaned into him and just tried to ask some gentle questions about how you're doing, and very encouraging. That's a healthy marriage.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a marriage that's under some stress, well, you know, chances are it's not going to go like that. It's going to be a little bit more, you know, critical, maybe defensive. So it kind of depends on the health of the marriage, on how the spouses communicate with one another and respond to each other.
And not fix. I would think that's a big part of it, too, because I know I went through in the very beginning of the pandemic these funks. It wasn't really depression, but just funks where I couldn't pull myself out of just feeling low. And my husband is just so notorious for wanting to fix things. And he had to kind of take a step back and realize, okay, I just need to be a shoulder for her. I just need her to know that I'm here if she wants to talk, and I'm here if she doesn't want to talk, instead of, well, how can I better the situation? Because at that point, it didn't feel like you could make it better sometimes.
Yeah, you know, you just described kind of men. You know,
yeah.
Men generally are fixers, are problem-solving mm-hmm. solvers, which actually doesn't go well generally with a woman, with a wife, because they kind of often want I just want a voice to listen to me. I want a safe voice that's not going to fix me and it's not going to try to judge me, to just listen to me. So, you know, great to hear that, how you guys handled that. But, again, a lot of couples not in a healthy place won't respond that way. So it is, you know, you really have to make a certain decisions every day on how you're going to respond to your husband or wife. It really is a daily decision on how you choose to respond to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You and know, you just mentioned something with your husband, and, you know, something I'll kind of just call this something. Often healthy marriages are made up of healthy decisions. The way that my wife and I have handled our stress has been really in a healthy way, even though we've had conflict. What happened to you and your husband, again, a healthy response during a really challenging time. So, but it really takes intention and decisiveness on how to respond to your spouse.
Mm-hmm. I would think so. Now, what about dwelling on negative circumstances? I would think that's very easy to do if you lost a job, you lost a loved one, or you're just in isolation, you're just struggling in general, or even worse, if you were one of the people who was already struggling with mental health before the pandemic and it just spiraled.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it does. That's exactly, you know, it's so funny that, well, not funny, but peculiar that we have this quarantine isolation issue. And what tends to happen when you're in that isolation mode is you isolate more.
Mm-hmm.
That's what tends to happen. So picture this marriage has gone through something or personally experienced something, and they've lost somebody or a job or financial impact, and they're not good at reaching out. Well, they're going to withdraw inward. That's where really it takes a sense of the spouse to kind of get in there, draw them out. I call it give them a safety net to kind of express what's going on. And really in those cases, they really need to reach out and get help. They really do. And that's where, again, a safe, sensitive spouse can help get in there and try to encourage the other one to reach out and get help. Because there's help out there. Our region is blessed with so many really good counseling organizations. Churches generally have gifted pastors that are available. And, you know, you have really good, healthy friends. So, you know, there are ways to help. But it does take a sensitive spouse to kind of encourage that other one to really figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And just so everyone knows, Bob is going to start coming on the show a little more frequently to give us more tips on having healthy marriages, healthy relationships, being able to have healthy families. That's, you know, Bob's expertise is in that. So looking forward to having you on more, Bob. But if anybody has a question about this topic or wants to talk to you further before we have you on again, is there a way they can contact you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the best way is through my email is bdonovan, D-O-N-O-V-A-N, at blackrock.org. That would be the best way right now.
All right, Bob. Well, I appreciate it. I know we'll be talking to you in a couple of weeks, so take care, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, Melissa. Great to talk to you again.
Sounds good. So we all know, it's no surprise, a lot of us are itching to get away, take a vacation. Last week, we actually talked to the Better Business Bureau about traveling this summer. And one of the resources that Luke Fry had recommended was leaning on your local AAA. Fran Mako is here with AAA right now. Fran, how are you?
Very good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
How have you been?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. Now, AAA apparently launched a new travel service website called Smart Depart. What do you know about this?
As you know, it is summer, and a lot of the states are easing restrictions, and people are just itching to go somewhere. Now, our quarterly stats are coming out later this week on where people are going to travel, who's going to travel. I don't have the numbers yet, but the conventional wisdom says that the majority of people, about 97%, are going to be hitting the road. They find it safer to take a road trip with family, with friends. And because we know that, and because we are trying to jumpstart travel, which has been severely impacted by the pandemic, we've developed a website called Smart Depart. It's basically a resource for people to go to when they are planning trips, planning vacations. And in fact, tonight, one of the resources or the aspects of the website is that it offers live broadcasts and webinars and a lot of information on what to do and where to go when you travel. Tonight is the second webinar that we are offering. It's at 4 o'clock. You have to register for it, but it's a live broadcast, and it's going to talk about personal safety during travel. So if folks go on AAA.com/smartdepart, you could register. You'll get a link, and at 4 o'clock tonight, hook into the webinar, and there will be experts talking about what you should do when you are traveling. For example, one of the suggestions I'm sure is going to be plan your trip in advance. Know where the rest stops are. Know where what rest stops are open. Know what accommodations are going to be available. What to do to keep yourself safe involving COVID. There's a lot of information that will be shared by these experts. There's also a newsroom that features interesting articles on the short and long-term changes impacting travel. A lot of industry experts are writing these. A lot of people internally are doing it. There's information on TSA requirements, you know, if you so choose to fly. Some guidelines that tour operators must follow. This is all in preparation for later on this year, possibly next year, because there is going to be a pent-up need for people who want to travel. You know, travel has always been important to a lot of people, especially from an educational point of view. So this is one way we are helping the public, members in particular, to prepare themselves to have a great vacation.
Mm-hmm. Now, where do you go to find Smart Depart?
Okay, go on AAA.com
/SmartDepart,
all one word.
Oh, okay.
Hey, I don't know if you can access it while we're talking. You know, we are AAA is one of the largest travel agencies in North America, so we see it as our responsibility to make sure travelers have accurate information and know about safe travel practices, because this is on the forefront of everyone's mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is the best way we could make folks stay up to date on changing safety protocols and latest travel information through industry and experts. We previously had a webinar a couple weeks ago where we had folks from American Airlines, the cruise industry, Marriott hotels, and they talked about all the steps they were taking in their individual areas to make people safe and to alleviate fears of people. I mean, travel has to come back.
Mm-hmm.
It's no secret that the travel industry has taken a hit this year, but it's just a matter of time before it really bounces back with a vengeance.
Yeah. Now, this is very cool. I'm on the website right now as we're speaking, and you know, there are really awesome resources on here, and it's as easy as you were saying. It's very, very user-friendly, but when you start to scroll down, there's what's called the Resource Center, and you guys have on here like a real-time COVID-19 restriction map where you
can...
Important.
That's so cool.
Good. Let's talk about it. Because to me, it's I think that this might be the most important thing because, you know, like we're hearing here in Connecticut that we might have to see a quarantine of 14 days if you're coming from a hot spot area in the States. And, you know, and I'm seeing on here, you know, reopening with restrictions, like places that you would need a mask. Maybe you don't need a mask. Places that, so it's not going to be exactly like Connecticut wherever you go. And I love this map. This is very cool.
That's right. The most important part, and I must have had a moment here, but we do have a real-time COVID-19 restriction map on it. All states are similar in their restrictions like Connecticut. You can go on this map if you are traveling to, I don't know, New York or to Massachusetts. Most folks are going to stay close to home. They're going to travel regionally, not necessarily long distances, but still, if you do decide to do that, you can go on this interactive map, which is updated regularly, and you could find out what the requirements are by particular state. It's something that was developed by our national office, but we have it on this website because it's very important. For example, if you decide you're going to go to Hawaii, some folks will do that, will fly to Hawaii. You need to understand that there is a 14-day quarantine mm-hmm. when you get there, and they're very strict. They know where you're going to stay. They're going to record where you're going to stay. They're going to know where you are, and they're going to check on you. And if you do not follow those quarantine restrictions, they're going to send you back home.
Right.
So this is some of the information you can find on this particular website. And some people may have not known that about Hawaii. And they get there and they realize, oh, I'm quarantined in a hotel room for 14 days.
Exactly. Well, it's funny, Fran. Like, I'm clicking on it now, and, you know, even Maine. I mean, how many people in Connecticut go to Maine? I would say that's a pretty common place in the summertime. And it's saying unless you live in Vermont or New Hampshire, you're quarantined for 2 weeks. So these are things that even in our own area, you don't even have to get on a plane. And I think this map is genius. You know, it tells you, like, if you're going down to Pennsylvania, they're only allowing outdoor dining right now. There is no indoor dining. Bars only open at 50% capacity. So just to give a couple of examples here, I find this to be a very helpful resource. What is the website again for anybody who wants to get involved and learn more about Smart Depart?
Okay, so if you want to hook into any of our webinars, it is AAA.com/SmartDepart, all one word. And if you screw down to the bottom, there is the COVID-19 map. But you could also access the COVID-19 map by going to AAA.com/COVID map, all one word.
Okay. And I do want to remind folks, don't be like me. I actually typed in triple, like the word triple A. So it's AAA.com.
Yes.
Yeah, because I kept typing it. I'm thinking, why isn't it working? So it's AAA.com/smartdepart, and you'll find all the resources there. Fran, very informative, super helpful. Thank you so much. And I look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Okay. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely.